his fucking fault because he lives here and he's on my nerves. So all of that European adds up to a lot of body hair.
I've heard that be like, cut the fucking cord.
And fuck the book. Fuck the book. Because I did that one time, I sat down with Vanessa and we did an hour that just didn't record because the microphone wasn't set the right way and we lost what was probably a really good hour. But the point, I got into podcasting because I started listening to podcasts when I was going to CR and I was on the bus. My car was broken down, so I'm taking an hour bus ride every day, you know, and I discovered Smodcast, which was Kevin Smith and Scott Mosier, you know, and I started eating it up. I would listen to, at that time, they had a back catalog of probably 100 episodes or so. I started ingesting 3 or 4 or 5 a day, you know, one on the ride down there, one on the ride back, one during the course of the day as I'm walking around campus, blah, 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 you know.
What were the dates for that? Because obviously Clerks coming out in 94 was all
they didn't,
or was
no,
it
no, 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 yeah, they didn't start their podcast till, I think they just reached their 4th birthday or something like that. So this was,
okay, it was more
this
recent.
Was about 2.5 years ago or so. They had just about 100 episodes, 80 episodes in, something like that, you know, and it was just getting off. It was just starting to kind of take off. Around the time I started listening, that was when Kevin actually now has a podcast network with probably about 24 shows on it, you know. And then I started branching out. I started finding all these others. And I am a fan of the medium. I ingest them nonstop. Every morning there's something in my headphones. There's a podcast in my headphones now, you know. Like Adam and Drew, remember Old School Love Line? Adam Carolla, Dr.
Yeah.
Drew.
Okay, I used to watch that all the time on TV.
They are back on the air now on Sweet. Adam Carolla's podcast network.
Now, and didn't they extend that further than MTV? Like, they had it on there for a while, and I thought they went further, or it was online
that,
or something.
Loveline has been a radio show for over 2 decades now, like 25 years. Okay. When then, 15 years ago, they took it and tried to make it, put it on MTV, and that didn't last very long, but it has continued to be a radio show. And Dr. Drew's been doing it for over 2 decades now. I think over 20 years, he's been the doctor on Loveline every night, you know?
Well, I like the combination of those two for a couple reasons. One, you're getting information and comedy, you know what I mean? But also, it's nice to actually have an authority on it. It's one of those things where when you watch, like, Oprah or something, she doesn't really have authority over anything.
Oh,
she just tells you her opinion and you're supposed to like her because she's Oprah.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's kind of like, I like having Dr. Drew. You know what you're talking about. I believe what you have to say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're knowledgeable about that. And then, you know, Adam Carolla will just...
You know, Adam's funny. These days, his head is enormous. One of the biggest things he talks about is just like how he's so much smarter than all these people and how why everyone should... And he makes a lot of valid points, but he delivers in them in a way of like, you people are all so fucking stupid and you don't listen to me. If you only listened to me, you'd be doing so much better for yourself.
Well, when he came off on that show, it was kind of like you could tell he was the comic relief, but he never sounded overly smart. Of course, you know, that's got to be kind of hard sitting next to a professional.
Sure.
But at the same time, I always liked him. So.
But it's great because now they're on Carolla's podcast network, Uncensored, on, you know, the reason Adam left Loveline was because they weren't getting to any calls. Adam would rant for 25 minutes and then they'd get to one call.
Yeah.
Well, now they have an hour and they get to say, fuck it, I'm going to rant for a half an hour. We'll take 2 phone calls and we're out of here.
Yeah.
We're going to, bye,
well, they
everybody.
Can continually do that, but if you're a viewer at home, you can't just sit there and watch someone rant. You kind of want to, you know, sort of get into it.
Well, that was the thing.
More,
they wanted the radio show to get into more phone calls. More, we gotta get this done. But as a longtime listener, you know, how many times had you heard the same advice over and over again? Yeah, don't stop doing
because you
drugs,
go for it for entertainment as well. It's
exactly.
Like knowledgeable for knowledge for sure, but definitely for laughs.
Exactly.
Definitely,
but if for the entertainment, you listen to Loveline for a year or two, you've heard the answer to all those questions.
Yeah.
So you started to enjoy Adam ranting about things. So the point was, I ingest so many podcasts that I think there's kind of a give and take. You know, like the take a penny, leave a penny, right? Mm-hmm. You know? I hate pennies. I always... any pennies I have, I leave them in the goddamn tray. Canada is smart enough. They said, fuck it, round to the nickel. We're down with pennies. But for just that reason, when something is 6:02 and I go, do you have any pennies? And they go, no, we don't have any pennies. Well, just take it out of the drawer, you know? Just give me the... Please don't give me 98 cents.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't do that. Sorry. My drawer would be... What, 2 cents off?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A woman at Safeway today, she forgot to ring up my donut. She's like, it's just a donut.
Exactly. Right?
I was like, really?
Just a donut.
Her thing is like, deli manager.
It's just
like,
2 cents. But the point is give and take. And so I had been taking from the medium of podcasts for 2.5 years now. And I said, you know what, it's time for me to give back. And I told this story, I think, on another show where it was like the kick in the ass was... A friend of mine on the East Coast started doing one, and you know, nobody, you don't have time for phone calls or to catch up, but I do make time for podcasts. So to hear her, you know, voicing opinions and telling stories and stuff, it was awesome. It was just like, nice. I get a little half hour of Amy every week, you know. So that was the kick in the ass. I had been talking about doing it forever, and I was like, you know, fuck it, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna start doing it, you know. it was giving back to the medium, which I think is, I've explained that to a few people, and some people just don't get it, or they think it's very noble of me. To me, it just seems like common sense. Like, if you take and take from something, you have to leave.
Well, I think that's more fulfilling, you know? Too. If you have a friendship like that, it's better than just the old same old, same old, hey, how are you? You know what I mean? Fine, works this, and it's just kind of drudging through life, which isn't very satisfying.
Sure. When
Which
they
I
do...
think like this, you know, there's that entertainment value, but you're also getting to know someone in a different way, which is cool.
Their podcast is very rigid. They have like 3 or 4 topic names that they hit every week. And I sent her the first episode. I said, what do you think? And she said, you know, it's like perfect East Coast, West Coast. Ours is rigid. And, you know, this week's, what is it called? Jizz Wisdom, you know, is blah, blah, blah. And mine is just like, so this is my friend, and we're talking now, and this is what's happening, you know. That being said, I haven't introduced you yet. Now we've been talking for 10 minutes. People have no idea who you are. So this is my friend Chris Bedell.
Hello.
We met for the first time probably playing cards, poker room at Blue Lake Casino. That's certainly how old are you?
I'm 28.
You're 28 years. So you're the same age as me.
Yep,
two young men.
I always assume that people are younger than me just because most of them that I meet out and about or, you know, work, things like that, they're usually a lot younger. I don't really feel 28.
You don't look 28.
I don't. Well,
that's
like the
a
thing
young man.
Is I don't really, not necessarily fit the description, but, you know, I always get carded when I go to the casinos. Mm-hmm. I always, you know, get that kind of look. You know, that woman at the table the other day, she was saying, oh, yeah, you're so young and all this kind of stuff. And then she's macking
on
me.
She thought of you as a young buck.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's kind of the thing is when you judge somebody in a certain way, you're always judging them from your own perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was one of the dealers who even said that based on how you grew up, you know, the way that you interact with them is kind of how you see either older people, younger people, things like that. And I've always kind of... For me, I've always felt like the same person. Say, like, when I'm a freshman in high school, I'm 14 years old, all the seniors looked like adults. They always seemed a lot older, you know, way more mature. But then once I got to be a senior, I didn't feel any different because I was the same person.
You don't see,
yourself
on the outside.
Exactly. So I'd always kind of seen people in the same way.
I feel, when I look in the mirror, I feel like, oh, Christ, I'm an old man.
Yeah.
It's the beard and stuff doesn't help. You know, I look in the mirror and I'm like, I look like a...
Yeah.
Like a chunky, beardy old man, you know?
Well, no, I've started, like, I mean, this is one of those personal things, but I didn't grow, you know, armpit hair until my senior year in high school. It's
weird.
Like, I still can't even grow a beard hardly, so it's like, it just kind of gets in patchy. I'm 28.
What's your ethnicity?
So,
So there's a lot of Irish, there's a lot of German over here, there's a lot of Italian. So all of that European adds up to a lot of body hair. But I have a friend just like my best friend in the world, Zach. Mm-hmm. Same thing. He's the same age as me. No beard. No, just it's patchy. You know, a little bit here on the sideburns, a little bit on the chin.
Yeah, some German, a little bit Native American, a little bit of Irish. And that's actually an interesting thing that I never really cared about my heritage or things like that, just because it didn't really mean a lot to me. I'm adopted as well, so coming from that, it's like, you know, I was born in Wyoming, I live in California now, but I've lived here my whole life, so, you know, the way, or my, you know, background, it just never really meant a lot, just because I didn't associate with it.
It all gets lost in the swim of things. Yeah. People ask me, I say, oh, I'm on my European, it's just a bunch of Europeans fucked with each other, and out came... You know, I mean, I got a grandfather who's straight off the boat, Ireland, and then my mother's side is all Italian, and our last name is actually German. I mean, it's just a bunch of European, stinky Europeans with a lot of body hair.
I think if you grow up in that culture, you know, say, you know, you kind of go to the East Coast because that's where they're coming to. I think if you grow up with that, then I think you're going to hold on to that a lot more. But once you're growing up and kind of... That's filtered. Yeah. You know what I mean? We have countrywide of filter.
I'm American. Yeah,
I'm American. I mean, you know, you're not really. You think of it. In a way, it gets under my skin when people try to associate too much with things like that, where it's just sort of like you have no association with them other than, you know, a little bit of DNA.
Sure.
But then you're trying to associate something. You know, it's almost where someone has. Yeah, I don't really want to go to race here, but say if someone has, you know, like 20% black in them, you know, but, you know, they may look white, but then they're trying to associate with that simply because, you know, it has a little bit in them where it's like,
and they use it like, they go, well, I'm 20% black. That's my crutch that I lean on.
Well, exactly. And it's almost kind of like, for one, do you really want to be leaning on that crutch? How is that beneficial to you? But it's almost because you seem more enlightened if you're some other race than white.
Mm-hmm.
When in reality, it's just kind of like,
you're enlightened if you're enlightened.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You can't really... I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, oh, it's cool to be, you know, a different race or stuff like that. I've never really associated with that, but of course, for me, I mean, I'm blonde hair, blue eyes. Like, I'm never going to know segregation. Exactly. Yeah, I'm definitely a poster boy. Like, I'm never going to know what it's like to be, you know, hated simply because of the color of my skin.
Sure.
So going through life, you never really understand that. And I think that's why people almost do it. They have that pride in themselves to be like, I'm this, I can stand up, you know, and kind of rise over that. But in this day and age, I don't think it's necessary.
But now you grew up in California.
I did.
Because there's interesting, something you said in there was, I'm never going to know what it's like to be hated because of the color of my skin. I grew up in North Carolina, and I know exactly what it's like to be hated because of the color of my skin. I was the minority in a kitchen full of really hard-working black guys. I was the one white dude, and they treated me like the odd man out, you know? I knew, you know, when the topic of race comes up, you know, if I take a class in racism or something like that, you know, I mean, I often talk about how I know what racism feels like. Mm-hmm. I was teased and put down and singled out, you know, for years on end, working in a kitchen full of guys who just didn't like me because I was the white guy. I was the guy who got a job when their friends didn't get a job there, you know.
But they're always holding on to that. And one thing that growing up in this kind of, in that environment where you kind of have that always on your shoulder, always on your back, definitely I think would have been hard for you. But you can't control it. Sure. And that's the thing. In that, like, that's why you almost just want to, like, bitch slap your ancestors for treating others like that. Because it is wrong.
Yeah.
You know, anything like that. Religion, race, sex, anything like that. It's wrong to treat people like that. But they're, like, bringing it down on this generation or on anyone they interact with because of the way that they were treated or because of how their parents were treated. And it carries on and on and on. But it's just kind of like, you can only... You know, start with yourself. If you want to change something, don't treat others that way.
Sure.
And that's all that you can do. But don't carry this hatred for me because I'm, you know, blonde hair, blue eyed, white guy. You know, as if I personally did that to you because I didn't.
And that's a point that's been made plenty of times. Did I?
And then I feel like a jerk because I'm saying it because it's like, fuck you, white guy. You know, you're not allowed to say that. But yes, I am. I didn't personally do that, and I never would. Yeah. I stand up for, you know, those types of people. That sounds wrong.
Yeah. Boy, we got hot button here quick. It's hot funny. Button, yeah. We certainly dreaded into heavy hot water here, but... But there's two sides to that coin. You're absolutely right. There's the defense of like, hey, I didn't own slaves. Mm-hmm. Why would anyone hate me because I'm a white person? Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't do anything to you. You know, there's another side of the coin that's like, was it 2013? As recently as 30 or 40 years ago, which is not a lot of time. Mm-hmm. You know, there was terrible racism and segregation, and things like that still exist. Yeah. When you see things like predatory lending, you know, there's still it's still a terribly racist world, you know. But you can't. These are not things that you or I personally did. Yeah. You know, you weren't out there being a predatory lender, as far as I know, to anyone.
No, not at all. Well, and that's the thing. It's kind of like if you're, you know, people like we are, where you are in line, where you are going to treat people in the right way, then, like I said, you kind of have to just start with yourself and, you know, start small. And then that's what you can do, you know, influence people when you have positive relationships with people, you know, of different religions, race, things like that. I think it's more about people as opposed to, you know, you always want to pick on people's differences as opposed to, you know, your similarities. Well, it's like we're all here together, so why don't you focus on that as opposed to, you know, things that separate you. You know, people separate themselves intentionally. Sure. Kind of like, sort of like with your work story where it didn't matter if you were necessarily white or, you know, it could have been anything else, you know, that they chose to pick on. Sure. But because you were different, that's what they picked on. But because it's such a, you know, a global issue.
Sure. And in that kitchen, you know, I wasn't the only white guy. There was a couple other white guys, and they all picked on the one Mexican dude who worked there, you know. Mm-hmm. Shit rolls downhill, and so the black guys picked on the couple of white guys, the couple of white guys picked on the Mexican guy, and racism was alive and thriving in the mid-2000s. Yeah. In North Carolina. Probably why I don't live there anymore, but that's neither here nor there, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I grew up in Humboldt County where it's, like, fairly lax. I don't like to use the word sheltered because that's just kind of a judgmental word. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But for me, it's kind of like, I love how I grew up because this is how I look at the world. You know, sure. It's idealistic for sure, but at the same time, I think that's how it should be.
Let's talk about growing up. Did you go to college?
I did. I graduated from HSU in 2006, just straight out of high school. That's one of my actually kind of big regrets is not moving away to go to college. I was 17 years old, not really ready for it. Mm-hmm. Big family person. So at that point, I was just kind of like, well, I guess I'll just go to HSU because it's here. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't even really think about it. You know, in high school, I was just kind of like, you know, got good grades, honor roll, things like that. But it wasn't, I didn't really have that projection, you know, to go away, or it wasn't really something that I was thinking about. I was just kind of like, okay, when it comes, you know, what do you do after high school? Go to college.
Your major was business?
Economics. With a business emphasis. Yeah.
It's fun. I've seen that story before, kind of two paths diverging. My best friend in Florida, you know, we met at like 12 and spent every day together. And when now I was homeschooled, okay? So that provided this whole unique experience. I certainly had a unique experience growing up, and I wouldn't trade it for the world. It did socially retard my growth a little bit. when I started working in that kitchen, you know, the other reason they picked on me was because I was fucking weird because I didn't hang out with people. Yeah. I spent all my time by myself playing video games and reading books and stuff like that. And this best friend and I, we hit this point where he graduated high school from public school and didn't think about it. His mother said, no, okay, now you go to college. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so he started driving down to college every day. He went to a computer tech school. And basically got, it's not a degree so much as like certifications to be an IT guy, you know, to be one of those dudes. And got out of there in 2 or 3 years, and okay, now it's kind of like that scene in Fight Club where it's like, all right, Dad, now what do I do, you know? And went and got the job, and then got one of those house loans that they, you know, years back when they were kind of giving anyone a loan, they, you know, he was one of those dudes where it was like, oh, you got a job, you graduated school, cool, here's a loan, here's a house. And it's funny because I always looked at it and went like, man, two paths diverge in the woods here, you know, like he went straight from high school to college, did a thing, got a job, got a career in the field, started making somewhat decent money. You know, and then I just started wandering. I started moving around the country and doing different things. And it wasn't until like 25, 26 when I was like, oh, this is what I want to do. And I went to school, started studying music, you know. But
it, now, what kind of support system did you have? Because for me, I think I, out of any one of my friends, you know, out of four or five, you know, really close guys, I was actually the only one who went to school. You know, a couple of them, they started, signed up at CR. That didn't pan out. You know, one even did it a couple years in a row. He was a star athlete, you know, good in school, everything like that. His home life was terrible, you know, and it was one of those things where, like I said, I personally didn't really have that. I wasn't proactive about, you know, projecting, but at the same time, I was already there. It wasn't something that I really needed. It was just kind of like, I'm just going to do this. It wasn't like, oh, yes, you know, gung-ho, go to college. It's like, that's just a matter of fact.
Sure.
You know, because
sure,
I had that support. And like I said, both my
parents. Were you being pushed into it? Were your parents like?
I didn't feel pushed really at all. It was something I wanted to do. But at the same time, you know, I'm 17 years old. I just didn't have, and I still kind of have that problem now where I don't really have forethought as to kind of like where I'm going. And that's, and since graduating, that's kind of what I felt like. Being like, okay, get done in 4 years, see where I'm at, no problem. And then I'm just kind of been floating ever since, you know, where I have the good job, but then I'm just kind of like, I don't really know exactly what I want to do. So with your friend, you know, kind of depending on, and that's what I was asking you, is depending on either your support system or kind of what you want. You know, if you don't really know where you're at, I think it's definitely a lot better to find yourself as opposed to, for me, like I said, I was really young. You know, I lived at home while I was going to school. So that socialization, it's like I didn't really party or anything like that. Like I met a lot of cool people. But I don't think I was really ready for college until 22, 23.
When you
until
were
I was actually,
out already.
I was already out. And once I started working, especially say with women, you know what I mean? Or it's like, I didn't really date in high school or college, but just having that other socialization at work where it's like, okay, you're getting to know people just, you know, just by being around them, as opposed to, okay, I'm just going to walk up to a stranger and ask her out or that kind of thing. Or because you're dealing with the public, you know, you're getting to know those people. You know, which that was definitely a socialization that was very valuable, but it didn't come until 22, 23, till I was already past, you know, being in school. So I definitely think that not necessarily if I would have waited to go to school, I would have been able to do that. But I definitely feel I would have been more prepared.
Well, you know, that fills me with topics here. Firstly, he did the whole nine yards. He not only went right into school, right into the job, etc. He married the high school sweetheart. He had the kid, just had the second kid, you know. I mean, he followed the whole, and I'm, you know, life happens sometimes, and I don't mean to say anything negative about him, but the way things happened to him was then the housing market crashed. He was upside down in his house. A house that he paid $125 for when he bought it is worth 25 now, you know, and now he's completely upside down in the house, and he's got the wife and the two kids, you know, and I would often, you know, we all make choices, but I would look at his life sometimes and be like, I'm almost kind of glad I didn't make that choice. Sometimes it would swing. Sometimes I was envious. I was like, well, you know, he went right for it. You know, he said, okay, this is the thing I'm going to do. Fuck it. Here I go.
Yeah.
You know, now I got the job. Now I'm making the money.
I think if you are the one being proactive about it, then when the, you know, not necessarily the negative stuff, but when life does happen to you, it may hurt when you're in that place, but at the same time, you made the decision. It wasn't life happening to you. Which for the past while, I've almost felt like I said, just kind of been floating, or life has been more happening to me because I haven't been like, okay, well, you know what, like, I'm going to take this trip over the summer, or, you know what I mean? It's just kind of like, well, whatever happens, happens.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, you made the decision, you know, not to go to school, or you wanted to do things that you did. So, you know, you might be envious of the little things that you might be missing out on, but at the same time, you know that that's not right for you.
Sure.
Whereas for him, that was right for him. You know, he might be in a bad spot now, But honestly, in his heart of hearts, he knows that he made the right decisions. Sure. You know what I mean?
Well, he made his decisions.
He made his decisions. Yeah.
And followed through with them and what have you. I don't regret any of the decisions that I made. You know, I'm happy with where my path has taken me because it's led me to a place that's extremely fulfilling.
Mm-hmm.
Every day I wake up and I go to school to study something I'm crazy passionate about,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you know, the adage of like, you do what you love and you'll never work a day in your life. Like that's mm-hmm. what it is for me. You know, I found that thing. It took me a while. But in the long run, not that long, you yeah. know, it was 25, 26 when I started to figure it out. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
which I think that's actually more time. Natural to find it, you know, mid, late 20s, early 30s even, because even that whole point, you know, I still really think you're finding yourself. You know, when you're in high school, I think you're probably most yourself, you know, elementary school, middle school. And then by then, everything else is influenced by everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just your school interactions, things like that, popularity, you know, social status, things like that. As you get into college, that carries over. So you're still kind of trying to mold and find yourself. Once you kind of get out, once your own, you know, you kind of have your own opinions, you're educated, things like that, you're actually able to kind of make your own path a bit more, as opposed to just trying to fit in or just trying to kind of either be successful, live up to everyone else's expectations.
But something you said did stick with me, though, because I've had things in my life where I've said exactly that, what you said, where it's like, I'm not making this decision. This is just kind of happening to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be a slow, gradual process sometimes where you're like, oh, this is just happening to me. I'm not
yeah.
really deciding to do this.
It's not like A, B, or C, you know, I pick A.
I pick
you
know, A, yeah. It's like A just kind of starts creeping in, and now
exactly.
all of a sudden I'm an A. Back to what you asked me about support network, though, is that, no, I was out on my own from, I'm trying to remember exactly, at about 16, I lived in North Carolina, and North Carolina wouldn't issue me a driver's license until I was 17. And
is that a state policy?
The state policy at the time. Like, that's the deal. You have to have your permit for at least X amount of time, and you can't get a license till you're 17 or whatever it was. I want to say it might even have been 15 and 16.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever year that was, I moved to Florida that year just because, fuck it, that's how bad I wanted my independence.
Mm-hmm.
I moved out from under my parents' roof at about 15 years old. I moved down, my sister was going through a divorce, and so I left my parents' house. I went and lived with her for a while, and then I moved to Florida. I moved in with that buddy and his mother, just to get a license, buy a car. Just these
mm-hmm.
were things that I wanted already.
Yeah.
You know, there was no, I had no weight in me.
Mm-hmm.
There was no like, well, you know, when I finish this,
yeah.
I'll get a license and a car. I wanted it now.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted it already, you know. So I moved to a different state just so I could go get a driver's license and a car.
Yeah.
Something that some people don't even get till their 20s,
yeah.
you know. There are people on this planet who are like, fuck it, I'll drive when I drive.
Yeah.
I don't care. I was like, no, I want it now.
Yeah.
And I've never moved back in with my parents since then.
Mm-hmm.
This is, I'm at 28 now, it's over a decade, it's 13 years or so
yeah.
that I've been out on my own just doing my own
the exact
thing.
Opposite. I'm still living at home. and that's almost the thing, is it's sort of like, because I've always had that, and I think there's a lot of resentment from a couple of my friends where their parents were like, no, you're going to have to pay rent.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Or like, and there's even one case where one of my friend's, he had moved in with them for a little while. They were living there. I think they were both paying rent at my best friend's house. And then eventually, you know, they end up like getting kicked out. They're like, okay, we're not going to do this, because they're like forcing to pay rent. But if you look at the stability of the relationship between the parents, you know, and the kids, it's just kind of like a bit wobbly.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with mine, not so much have I really not felt that, you know, being proactive and actually leaving, you know, that failure to launch. But it's like, I don't want to leave.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like, yes, I want to get out, be on my own, doing my own thing, but at the same time, this is one thing that really scares me too, is being alone, because I have always had that safety net.
Sure.
So it's not even a conscious decision not to move out. It's just kind of like, you know, I just don't want to not have my family there, you
mm-hmm.
know, because they always happen. So that's a pretty scary thought.
Now it's been 3 or 4 years that I've lived in this place by myself. And I came here from a couple different roommate situations, and I've already made it. At 28, I've already decided I'll never do that again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, roommates is the worst thing that you can possibly.
I've only heard horror stories. And my best friend was, when I was in school, he wanted me to move in with him. And that's kind of how I feel about it, is don't move in with someone that you're friends with. You just need some casual whatever. As long as they pay their bills,
You
basically have nothing to do with them. And then that way, all the stuff that is good in a friendship, you know, where you want to hang out with them, all that kind of stuff, you don't get caught up in being like, well, I don't want to hang out with this person right now. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
I'm friends with you, but when I come home, I kind of just want to do my own thing.
Sure.
So that was one thing where, for me, I was, of course, you know, going to HSC, I was living at home while I was there, which I think that enabled me not to be as social, not to develop as much as I could
mm-hmm.
have. So looking back on it, at the time, I didn't feel like I was making a decision to stay home and go to school. It was more or less like, okay, this is just kind of what's happening. And then I didn't do it. And then, of course, after the fact, I have those feelings. But for him, he suggested, like, hey, you know, why don't we move in? I'm just kind of like, okay, well, you know, I think I'm going to stay here. I'm like 20 years old. You know, he was living in Eureka at the time. So, of course, you know, I'd go there. But, you know, the drive and all that kind of stuff. And I probably would have had to work, which I didn't have to work going to school. So I was fortunate in that regard. But it was just not something that, at that point, I really wanted to do. I didn't really, it almost wasn't even a conscious decision. It was kind of like, eh, I just don't really feel like it's a good thing. And then, you know, he even said after the fact, he's like, I'm kind of glad we didn't end up moving in, because he's like, he ended up having some roommates, some of them good, some of them shitty.
Yeah.
So.
A wise choice that you made without even knowing it. It's
mm-hmm.
it's a terrible thing. That particularly what you never want to do is be the roommate of a couple, because no matter what happens between that couple,
mm-hmm.
it's your fault.
Yeah.
You know, I did
and
that.
And he was in that situation.
Mm-hmm. I did that before
a couple
I got
times.
Here. And it's just, whenever they're fighting, it's fucking, it's your fault. If
yeah.
you weren't here, this would be so much easier. And I left, I moved out of there, and sure enough, they continued to fight.
Yeah.
And ended up breaking up. And none of it was my fault, but they're going to perceive it that way.
Yeah.
They're gonna, it's his fucking fault because he lives here and he's
yeah.
on my nerves and... You know, and so I put
well, you can't
all that
triangulate a relationship, you know what I mean?
No.
You can't have, okay, well, it's like, yes, I'm friends with both of you, but at the same time, who's it going to come down to? I'm probably going to take the guy's side or the girl's side, depending on who I've known longer, or whatever the case may be, but you can't choose sides, because then it's always coming back to the person as opposed to them directly dealing with their issues.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like, oh, well, what do you think? It's not about what I think. You guys need to have a sit down and,
mm-hmm.
you know, work this stuff out, so...
Yeah, I went through a lot of that where it was, I was a friend of his, you know, and I came there and then they are fighting all the time and it's constantly being blamed on me and it, because it, oh, it's my fault because I live in the back room and, you know, you don't want nothing to do with that. I'll tell you that right now. So.
And at this point, I don't even want roommates. It's kind of like, okay, you know, I have, you know, my family, but it's like, leave, go to work, come home, like do my own thing, hang out in my room, walk around, you know what I mean? But I don't really hang out at home.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's kind of like either out at the casino or like, you know, hanging out with other friends, whatever it may be. So it's kind of like I have that as a base, which is fine. And I think more recently, say with like dating or, you know, entertaining other people, it'd be nice to have my own space. But at the same time, I don't think it's really hindering me in some ways, but other ways not.
It's interesting. I didn't know that about you. I didn't know that you still live there. I'm not saying anything negative about it. I think...
I've heard that be like, cut the fucking cord, you
well,
know, and that's the thing. I think socially and just for my own health, I think it would be very good to do that.
It's a wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm.
Living on your own is fantastic because no, you don't walk on eggshells around anyone.
Mm-hmm.
You do whatever you want, whenever you want, you know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not uncommon. There, you know, back to our like roots conversation or that, you know, there were generations where it was like, that was just the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Son lived at home until he got married and then went out and
mm-hmm.
found his own, you know, and that's just how people
and I don't actually
times,
feel
you know?
Bad about it only because, you know, because other people didn't have that same experience. They don't have that same attachment to their family. They're like, get me the hell out of here.
Mm-hmm.
So because that's the only reason why, you know, I'm kind of conflicted with it, where it's not something where I actually want to so much. It's like, okay, yes, I know I need to, but I'm not, like, gung-ho on it.
But that's just
you know
it.
What I mean?
It depends
like,
on the family dynamic.
Yeah.
Like, if it works...
We get along great, you
if
know
If it
what
works,
I mean? So,
then work it, you
yeah.
know? Then, like, why would you change it? You know, my dynamic was, I'm very stubborn, I'm very headstrong, and I don't like being told what to do, ever. And so I wanted out as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. I didn't want anything to do with being in a place where you should
was
you
it like
need
a dictatorship
time,
or was it just kind of more your own personality of being a teenager and that
it,
was more
it was a lot of just teenage angst and I mm-hmm. want to do whatever I want to do, but you know, just I'm a quirky and weird person and I've always, you know, it's just when I reached, especially once I reached the point of living alone, it was like, yeah, I can't go back now.
Yeah.
You know, I could never go back to a situation with roommates. I just don't
yeah.
get along with people that well. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
people will get on your nerves given spend enough time
yeah.
with them, and you're gonna.
Well, you need that alone time. You need the separation. It's kind of like with any relationship, you don't want to have to get off work and be like, I'm
yeah.
having a terrible day right now, and I know exactly what I'm going to walk into. Not that that's not comforting most of the time, but at the same time, you just need that separation. I don't want to have to leave my own house just to get the separation. I just
sure.
want to be able to go there and be like, okay, I'm going to tune everything out. I'm just going to be in my own headspace. You need that.
Back to Adam Carolla, his advice for a successful marriage is square footage and 2 televisions. I'm going to go over here and watch SportsCenter. Don't talk to me for a little while,
yeah.
you know, I mean, that's...
Well, no, that's exactly what you need, especially, I think, depending on, you know, either the size of your house, your apartment, things like that. You always need to have your own life. Definitely, like, when you know, I had this discussion on the last date that I was on with this girl where she's like, yeah, you know, we're sort of like, you know, I lived with my boyfriend, but, like, when we're hanging out, sure, you'll have that kind of... And we were talking about one of her friends and the guy that she was seeing. It was kind of like... They're almost like instantly living together,
mm-hmm.
but then it was sort of like, one, I don't think you can really do that because you haven't built up the relationship, you know what I mean? Because it's so new, you don't really care if the person's around, but you know, a little while into, you're just kind of like, can I get some separation? I don't even really
sure.
know you, or you know what I mean? You need to kind of build on that. You sort of, in the morning, talk about, be like, hey, what are you up to today? Oh, okay, you know, I'm going to do this, this, and this. And then you kind of go off and do that. You know, if she's in the other room, you know, painting or whatever, I'm watching TV or whatever the case may be, you'll like run into each other, but you don't want to have to always be around each other, you know, or like in the same room or dependent on what the other person is doing, you know, and be like, what are you doing? What are you doing? You know, you
well,
can't have that.
I have 2 things to say to that. First of all, look at this is my home. Okay. And for those listening, there's nothing to it. There's 2 rooms, okay? There's a living room and a kitchen and a bedroom, and that's it. This is not conducive
but
to...
it's a good space,
it's
though,
a lovely
for you,
space
you know?
For me.
Yeah.
When I moved in here with a girlfriend, and it got tight. As long as the relationship was happy,
mm-hmm.
you know, those first couple months were great.
Yeah.
As soon as you hit the rocks at all, then...
There's literally
nowhere
to go.
Yeah, I mean, I would try and come out here in the living room, and that wall is paper thin.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sitting out here playing Guitar Hero with a friend, and she hears every note that's happening out
yeah.
there. You know, and this is kind of dating myself back 4 or 5 years ago now, but, you know, I mean, there's nowhere to go.
And I'm only talking, you know, like, I'm talking abstract because I haven't actually had the experience of it, but I've had a lot of friends who have, and it's kind of easy to give advice because going into this situation, I already know how I would act. You
yeah.
know what I mean? It's kind of like, I wouldn't say I've lived with girlfriends, but it's like I've been over there every single day or, you know, stayed for periods of time. So it's kind of like similar, not exactly the same, because it's like I could always walk out the door if I wanted to or just not go over there. You know what I mean? But I think you definitely need to have that separation. And even if you're in a relationship, I think going into it, you need to kind of have a mindset of how you're going to treat her. Like, okay, how I'm going to treat someone in this situation, or you know what I mean? I'm a very good communicator. You know, that comes from my mom, where it's just growing up, I was definitely a mama's boy, but we could talk about anything. So it's kind of like, I'm very open with my feelings, you know, saying like boyfriend-girlfriend relationship, very open, sentimental, expressive. Which I definitely am proud of. But going into a relationship, any, you know, friendship, boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever it may be, I already know how I'm going to treat the other person or the situation, that kind of thing. So it's not, you know, if the wall's paper thin, it's like, you can't really escape the person, but you do need to have that communication at some point.
Well,
you know?
It's the independence, too. I mean, independence,
yeah.
when it comes to matters of the heart, heart-to-heart conversations... Independence can be one of the sexiest things about a person, you
yeah.
know? I mean, I want to, you know, what's sexy in a partner, what I find is what did you do today? Tell me something interesting that happened today. You know, give that independence of like, this is the thing that I'm into. We, you know, we can be into things together, but then I can be into this thing and I can tell you about how cool it was and vice versa. You know, you should, a partner should kind of bring that to the table too. You know, and should have kind of their own interesting life going on, you know? Yeah.
Well, that's one thing definitely on my list of things is to be, you know, college educated, smart, things that I like. I don't, especially in a dating relationship, I don't particularly like talking about day-to-day stuff like, oh, hey, how's work, da-da-da, you know what I mean?
Well, it's okay because it's... But yeah, it's boring.
But it's boring, but it's one of those things where you don't... If the person's just worried about, like, day-to-day, or like, oh, my work was crappy today, or whatever, they go on about their coworkers, or if they really have nothing to say, then it's not fulfilling for me to be with you. It's kind of like, you're a great person, you know, you're nice, but at the same time, you don't really have a whole lot to say. Mm. You know what I mean? Where it's kind of like this one girl that I'm dating, she was studying to be a dental hygienist, and it was just kind of like, I was totally into her, never kissed her, never anything like that, just like literally went on dates, and it was kind of like, wow, I'm fascinated by this girl, totally into her, but just because we could have great conversations. You know, we talk like 3 hours on the phone just about anything and everything, but when you talk to her, she would actually be teaching me stuff, you know, or she would actually have opinions about things, mm-hmm. and it's just kind of like, wow, you're smart, I, you know, cherish your opinion, sure. what you have to talk about, and that's what I want. You know, not every conversation has to be, you know, deep, but at the same time, you want to be able to, if I call somebody up, I don't want them just to be complaining about work or, you know, little things that in reality don't really matter. I do want to have a heart-to-heart connection with,
well,
you know, people. You know,
intelligence
so, you know.
Is important. I knew a girl who struggled, got put on academic probation, and then the next semester, when I met her, it was like wrapping up the end of a semester, and we were heading into the next, and she said, oh, I'm not going to be at school this semester. I said, why not? And she said, well, I didn't make the grade point average that I needed to get off of academic probation to be reinstated as a student. I said, oh, what was the grade point average? 2.0. Really?
Mm-hmm.
For me, I've always been in this. Not that I wouldn't be your friend or anything, but like...
No, I almost wouldn't be somebody's friend. Well, that's the thing is because I've always been into school and like, I really do think it does go back to, you know, that support system where it's like, I remember crying in fourth grade because I got a bad grade on a math test, mm-hmm. you know, because I really wanted to do well. And same thing in high school, it's like, I remember like, it's kind of a funny story, I get like a D on a math test, I'm like about to totally weep up, walk onto the quad, like see the girl that I like and talk to her, and I'm like, oh, so I felt a lot better. Okay, anyways, I wish I was still a teenager. But anyways, it does go back to that support system, you know, what kind of effort you put into it. I honestly think you have to try to fail at school. I've always been into it, I've always loved it, so I completely don't understand people that aren't into it, aren't knowledgeable. I'm lazy as fuck, but I still love knowledge.
Right.
You know what I mean? Gaining the knowledge is going to be tough because it's like I'm not necessarily going to sit down and read it, you know, textbooks or whatever, you know, novels, things like that all the time. But at the same time, I love talking about different things.
Sure.
I love the knowledge.
It is human condition to want knowledge,
yeah.
you know? Like, that's what sets us apart from other animals, you know, who are content, like the cat on your lap, who is content to just lay there and do nothing. You know, it's a human condition to say, I want knowledge. I want to know about things, you know. I think the other side of the coin is that, you know, school is a particular kind of learning. There are different kinds of learning. I myself, I'm a kinesthetic learner. I need hands-on.
Mm.
You can describe something to me, but I need to kind of see it in action. I came across this. I was working on a project with a professor, and I sent him a file, something we were talking about. I said, kind of like this, and he wrote back with, you know, a paragraph saying, well, it should be yes, but it should be like blah, 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 and I couldn't make sense. You know, I'm sure if I sat there and tried to read it, but as soon as you wrote it down, no, see, the figure should look like this, bam, it's in my head. Sure, no problem, understand it. You know, there's different styles of learning. Mm-hmm. So some people are just kind of not adept for scholastic, you know, college-type learning.
For sure, but there's definitely different. Some people, they're just kind of like, I don't care about anything.
Yeah.
You know, and it's beyond being a slacker. They just don't care. There's a difference between, you know, like, I just don't learn well. I completely understand that. I've known people like that, so I definitely am not judging them so much. But just, the people are just like, I don't care mm-hmm. about anything, even though school's not that hard. Like, you can't even get a 2.0. I mean, literally, like, all you have to do is basically just show up and just know the minimum.
Sure.
You know, it's just, it's one of those things, like, not that much effort, but you're making it a point to fail.
I couldn't tell you how many classes I've passed in my collegiate career without studying a lick. Just by showing up to the lecture.
I got so many C-minuses. Oh my gosh, it ain't just you.
Oh, I got B's all day without cracking a book. Just by showing up to the lecture, taking notes. Uh-huh, yeah, you're telling me information, so I'm going to listen. Because again, it's kind of kinesthetic learning.
Yeah.
You know, you're telling me something, I'm going to write it back down, so I'm following what you're saying. And I've passed entire classes. I think the last semester I had a class about race, and I got, I think, the second highest grade on the midterm. And I didn't read a goddamn thing in that class. Every week it was like, this is the reading for this week, and make sure you do it because we're going to be talking about it. I never did a single reading.
It pissed me off so bad sometimes. They'd be like, okay, yeah, do the reading, and then like they're just... Like, they test on the lecture as opposed mm-hmm. to the book, which pissed me off a bunch of times.
Fuck the book. Fuck the book. You know, there's a few books. The only books I buy nowadays is maybe something like this. It's like, this is a thing you want on your bookshelf. Mm-hmm. What I'm holding up is, it's called Techniques of the Contemporary Composer. It's the kind of thing that you'd reference. You know, I own books like that. But as far as, like, the book for that class, the race book, I went and bought a $7... 3 editions ago, just to say I had it, because
yeah.
I never cracked it.
Yeah.
I never did any of the readings.
Yeah.
And I blew away people who, this was a sociology-based class. That was what it fell under. And I remember somebody that worked at the casino with us was in the class with me as well. And she was studying her butt off the whole time. You know, I remember the night before the midterm, she was, oh, I got to read all these things. And I studied for hours. I pulled an all-nighter and I studied. And her grade was like a 76. And I got a 94 with common sense.
Yeah.
By looking into the questions and being like, I'm going to, yeah, I think this is the answer.
Yeah.
You know, I never
cracked. Although I can tell that you're smart, though, and I think that's definitely why you're able to get by like that, just because you do have that common sense. You're naturally smart. So it's not even necessarily about the knowledge, but once you, not even necessarily apply yourself, but just because you can go into it and be like, you already have that gift.
Sure.
You know, you can tell by your rhetoric. You can tell by, you know, the things that you are passionate about. I don't think you can be into music, for one, and not be smart.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Because you have to have that.
Well, you said what's one of my favorite phrases right there, apply yourself. You know, if you ever watch Breaking Bad, like, that's one of the things that Walt says to Jesse. All I'm asking is that you apply yourself, you know? The human brain is capable of so much as long as you're giving a tumbling fuck about mm-hmm. what you're doing, you know, as long as you're applying yourself
yeah.
to what you do.
And
you
it's
know?
Not even applying, I mean, it's almost a misnomer when you say that, because it's almost like you could literally be doing nothing and still be doing something, you know, which is more, people are like, I feel like you're going in the opposite direction. Like, I just want to fuck up in my life. I'm not going to do well in school, even though everyone in your life is telling you, hey, it's important to do well in school. You know what I mean? Like, do you really have no self-worth or any, you know, don't you want to apply yourself? It can be very hard for people if either, you know, you don't learn in a scholastic format, or, you know, you don't have that support system from home, or whatever the case may be, you know, a million different reasons why.
Well, yeah,
but
I
do
mean,
you just
to
not,
play devil's advocate,
you know,
you got two white straight males here talking about, you know, how easy school is and how simple it is. I mean,
but that's the thing, because going into it, I wanted to do well. So for me, like I said, I can't, on any topic, race, religion, whatever the case may be, I'm coming from the perspective of, yes, I grew up white, you know, blonde hair, blue eyes, privileged, all this kind of stuff, so I'm coming from that perspective. However, I don't really think that those things dictated necessarily, you know, where I'm coming from. That's how I grew up. So it's like, at the same time, when you say you're devil's advocate, it's just kind of like, I hate reverting back to, oh, these are the reasons why I feel like that.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, they are, but at the same time, there's, you know, millions of other people who grew up just like me, and, you know, they definitely didn't follow the same path. So.
Sure. Well, you know, again, I just love to play devil's advocate, yeah. So... The world. What do you do for a living? I always feel like you have like the job Chandler had in Friends. Where it's like, I don't know exactly what you do.
Nobody actually knows what you do.
It involves like a computer, and you work at a bank.
I didn't watch that show enough to know exactly what he did. I remember he wore
I think there was a joke. They never told you what he.
Yeah,
did.
He was just kind of there.
He worked in an office behind a computer. Yeah. You know,
that's what I always say, because I'll be sitting at the table, and it's kind of funny because I've actually sat there and said what I do at the table, and it gets more and more boring every time I say it, because I'm just like, I try to make it sound like official. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I work in accounting and collections at Coast Central Credit Union.
Yeah.
And I, you know, and these are the things that I do, because it sounds sexier to say stuff like that, or, oh, this is what I do, and you make it sound technical, when in reality it's just kind of like,
you push paperwork around.
Paperwork. It's just like, it's clerical work, you know, data entry, things like that. Some of it's somewhat interesting. This is the thing. I like banking overall. I want to do things that are more analytical, where not necessarily I'm the one making the decisions, but I want to be analyzing data and making decisions based off of that. Mm-hmm. As opposed to just being like, okay, well, here's some information, you know, do this project, or, you know, whatever it may be.
Okay.
So
Do you have employees? Do you have anyone that works under you?
No.
You don't call any shots to anyone? You get...
The only thing I really call shots in is... This is the one thing that I love being in the back office, is I have a lot of member contact, but that's, I actually work in two separate departments, accounting and collections. I like how that sounds, it kind of rolls off the tongue, but they're actually two separate departments, very different stuff. So I have a lot of member contact. I just spaced on the question.
brief pause, I'm going to get a...